Blog Talk Radio.
Now, before I say anything else, Stephen, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's speculist.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today, and we talk about the future, and we take a pretty unusual view of that stuff. To wit, we believe that there's a pretty good case to be made that the world is getting better all the time. We believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention. We believe that something is going to happen, something wonderful. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm great. It's great for us to hear each other's voices. I think this is a...
We have had two shows now where, for one reason or another, at the very beginning, you know, I couldn't hear you. And so, you know, we winged the first time, and you were able to log back in, and we went on with the show. But this last Sunday, we didn't have no such luck. It just completely tanked. And so
the show fell apart on us. So I actually have a theory as to what's happening. And I probably should have talked to you about this offline, but what the heck, with people listening, I'm going to have to go there, okay?
Okay.
I think that you've always wanted to do the intro and that you were hanging up on me.
Yeah, I was muting you.
you would hit the Mr. Mute button so that you could do the talking at the beginning, right? And it got carried away this last time, and now your whole, you know, plan to take over the world has fallen, crumpled like a house of cards. Am I right?
Pretty much, that's it. And after, you know, apparently my soundboard froze where I was unable to unmute you, and then I was like a deer in the headlights at that point. So that's what happened Sunday night. So we're going to go with that explanation.
Okay, well, I always think of that scene, and I know you're totally cool, but that scene in Wayne's World when Wayne walks off the set and he leaves Garth there.
No, that's pretty much it. I like that. That's it.
And later they're talking about it, and Garth goes, "Well, I handled it okay." But
yeah, that's right. It was not bad.
No, I'm glad we're back on the air and things are working out. Hopefully, we don't know that we have identified the source of the problem, but right now the show seems to be working, so we're going to. We're going to assume that we have and carry on as though we have. So
awesome.
What's new? What should we start with?
Well, I wanted to get from you, Phil, a update as to what happened the Monday morning following that strange workout that you were describing for us in our last full show.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, we talked about a new workout that I've been following. I got it from Timothy Ferris's website, the guy who wrote the 4-hour work week, and basically this workout is all about doing very high intensity, slow repetitions with as much weight as you can move a few times, and the idea is to work out slowly. It's like 5 seconds per rep, and do one set to failure. So every exercise you do it until you literally can't move anymore. And I actually did.
Doesn't that work on you psychologically, though? I mean, working to where you got nothing left, and the muscle just involuntarily decides to not work. I mean, how does that work? I mean,
well, I'll tell you. Here's how it works with me. I don't know how it works with other people. There are probably these really intense people that it works a completely different way. But with me, it's like I go, "That's pretty close to failure. I'm going to call that failure."
Literal failure or not, that's close enough.
With me, it's like, I'm pretty sure I'll fail on that next one, so we'll just call it done here, okay? So I'm not quite as, maybe if I were younger, I would push it to absolute failure every time. But I reach this point where I'm going, if I'm pretty close, then we'll count that as failure. But even doing it like that, even maintaining the something less than purity in the workout, it is devastating, the effect. And I had said last Sunday that I felt like I wasn't sore, but I was going to be sore. And in fact,
right.
It was like still another day later before I actually just felt it. I woke up the next morning, I was just like, wow. And it's not even like sore, it's like just run over, you know, the old steamroller, just completely wiped out. But I like it. It's a good feeling, and you can do the whole thing fairly quickly. So I'm gonna stick with it for a month or so and just see if I can. I don't think I'll be able to claim what Timothy Ferris did, which was that he put on like 34 pounds of muscle in 30 days. I don't think I'll do anything quite that dramatic. But then again, I take a little off the requirement to go absolutely to failure every time. But I was telling Soraya, one of the requirements of this is that everything you do, you write it down, right? So you want to keep very careful track of, you know, how many pounds, how many repetitions, and did I complete a full repetition within the set? Or you know, what was the, like, did I do four plus one that didn't quite make it or whatever? And I was explaining to her that by the time I got to, the last three or four exercises, you're supposed to allow, 2 to 3 minutes in between. And by the time I got to the last three or four exercises, this is how intense this is, I literally could not grip the pen to write for a minute and a half after doing it. I'm just my hand just wouldn't work. So I thought, well, this is, it's pretty intense. If nothing, if I'm not going to, even if I'm not going to get the huge bulky, Incredible Hulk body, I can at least, that's a pretty good story to tell. I worked out so hard, I couldn't work my hand. So, I couldn't make a fist. That's.
I'm going to tell you the sorest I've ever been. In a workout like that, I a couple of days after the workout, I couldn't shampoo my hair. I mean, I literally kind of held my hands up next to the side of my head and then shook my head back and forth as if I was saying no, just. I just couldn't move my arms. I mean, it was that bad. But yeah, I'm with you. I know about that feeling. I just haven't. Yeah,
that's a bad feeling. I don't know if we probably should move quickly away from this because after all, it's a show about the future, not two old guys talking about how hard it is for them to lift weights. But hey, that's pretty good, entertaining stuff too.
I hope so.
Who we need is Michael Darling to compare notes with us because I know actually his deal is tennis, and I think rather than lifting weights till he can't move his arms, he likes to play tennis until he blows his knee out. That's always his thing, but. He's not with us tonight. He's on vacation. So to our friends in the chat room, you're going to have to talk amongst yourselves. Stephen and I will do our best to occasionally throw in a comment, but we don't have our chat host with us tonight. So,
oh, well.
Michael, if you're listening, hope you're having a good time up there in the mountains and, come back soon because we need your input. But he didn't leave us completely empty-handed. We don't have a chat host, but he did give us a nice list of topics to discuss tonight, and I think we'll probably touch on some of those a little bit later. But before we do any of those, I want to give an update on our Race to the White House Fast Forward Radio coffee mug competition.
That's right.
I've got a winner. I'm going to declare a winner tonight.
That sounds great.
we're a week out from the election, and for anyone listening, we had been going through the talking points of the two major presidential campaigns, of course, Senators McCain and Obama, listening for who had the most speculist-friendly agenda, who would give us the most forward-looking, futurist-looking, speculist-friendly, speculitious kind of content anywhere in their program. And the winner of that, not the winner of the election, but the one who gave us the most forward-looking vision of the future, would get a fast-forward coffee mug, coveted fast-forward radio coffee mug.
We have to also emphasize that the winner of this contest doesn't necessarily even get our votes. I mean, we could say that's definitely the.
In fact, when I tell you who won, you will say that's right. That person did not get my vote.
Okay. Let's
because we've got a dark horse surprise winner here. Okay, this is our October surprise. For the fast forward radio coffee mug. Because I'll tell you what, I voted last week, early voting. I went in to the rec center where I can do my weightlifting workout and vote. We live in the future now. I mean, think about this: you can go to some place, you work out and vote at the same place. That's pretty awesome. And after
that is
I
cool.
voted, after I voted Thursday, and I got home, and it's like Thursday night, I've got the TV on. You know how, have you voted yet, Stephen?
No, I have not. No.
Okay.
I will actually vote on the election day. So.
Okay. Well, good man. You know, you always are the late adopter for this newfangled stuff, and I think that's
right. But,
you know how annoying all those political ads are?
Yeah, it's we're at this point in this long election. They've gotten there. Yeah.
After you vote, multiply it by 10. Okay, it's like. It's like the TV comes on and go, no, geez, I already, come on, you know, I didn't want to hear this anyway, but, you know, and I realized that I've just had it with both these two, okay?
Well, that'll teach you to vote early, see? Now you know, it has multiplied your annoyance by 10.
It has. I thought I'd be done with it, and it's actually made it worse. But I went back over, I was looking at statements both of them had made about space. There was this comparison, and I'll find the link. We can put that up in the show notes. And I'll tell you what, neither one of them said anything. I mean, obviously they didn't say space elevator, or we would have a winner, because that was our rule. If anybody said space elevator, we'd have a winner. But neither of them said anything even remotely inspiring, you know? I mean, we don't have to have JFK saying we choose to go to the moon, but, you know, throw us a bone of some kind. And I look back over all the issues that we had reviewed before. I think where we left it was they were tied.
Right.
And I've decided they're still tied. And they're tied for last place, and I'm not sending either one of those guys a coffee mug, okay, because they've annoyed me with their ads, and they just have not provided the kind of vision of the future that I was looking for.
Please tell me it's not Kucinich.
No.
Okay.
Actually, no. We're going to award this coffee mug to someone who is really doing something to build a brighter future, all right?
All right.
Someone who is raising four fine boys. All right, in support of a speculist kind of lifestyle, and who's doing it with this thing on her foot because she hurt her ankle. That's right, your wife, Sherilyn Gordon, is the winner of the Fast Forward Radio coffee mug. So.
Oh, I thought this was open only to people that are actually running for president. I guess, did you write her in or something, Phil? I mean,
I just changed the rules. I don't care.
Well,
you know, after hearing about Sherilyn hurting her ankle, I said she should get a coffee mug, you know, because, I mean, you know, she's out there helping you do your thing, making it possible for you to be on this show, you know, raising four kids who are all going to be great speculists, and it's like, that's really working towards the kind of future that we're looking for. So, you know, let that be a lesson, Senators McCain and Obama, you know, maybe next time.
Be more inspiring.
Yeah, be a little more inspiring. This time, the award is going to a fine lady, a fine American, and I won't say the next president of the United States, but Stephen's wife, Sherilyn. So.
Well, she might, you know, I can't really speak for her. You know, I've tried in the past, and it never worked out. So, if one of these senators, you know, wears a sci-fi outfit on Halloween night or something, you know, she might you know, give up her coffee mug in favor of one of these guys. But
entirely
that,
her choice.
Yeah, entirely her choice. But barring that, she's going to enjoy coffee out of that mug. So,
outstanding. We'll see to it that she gets that. And by the way, anyone listening who has won a mug, once again, to claim your prize, you need to send us your mailing address to the speculous email address that's on the homepage. So, Stephen, Sherilyn doesn't have to do that. I know how to reach you guys. But we got a little bit of backlog of winners right now. So. If you're listening, if you've won a mug, if you'd like to claim your mug, drop us a line. I went through the emails the other day expecting to get a couple of mailing addresses, and they weren't there. I think you people know who you are. So, you know, I'm going to start using them myself here pretty soon.
Well, our email address is, I believe, speculist1@yahoo.com. So
that's correct. Thank you.
Speculist1@yahoo.com. So just email us there, and we will hear from you. It's not like announcing that on air is going to give us any more spam.
No, we're getting plenty of spam. In fact, some night we ought to take a little bit of time and just go through that mailbox and apprise our readers of all these outstanding business opportunities that are being brought our way. You know, maybe we should share a little bit.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, these are people that want to, like, for example, deposit, you know, $22 million in my bank account.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then pay me 10%. Anyway, we shouldn't get into all that. So.
No, we shouldn't. But our listeners are worthy of that kind of success, too. But we're going to move on to topics on the future. And if you'd like to join us talking about the future. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We've got a self-directed chat going on this evening. We don't have our chat host with us, but you're free to talk amongst yourselves in the chat room. Or if you've got a question for us or a comment on one of the topics, you can give us a call at 347-215-8972. Oh, and that reminds me, I guess since I'm running the switchboard, I'm supposed to look and see if there's callers, right?
Yeah. From time to time, you might want to check. See if
I don't know how you do all this at the same time. You know, with the chat room and all the topics and I'm going to send you a mug, too, I think.
Well, I think we should kind of exclude ourselves from these mug competitions. Our listeners might think,
it's going to seem like nepotism anyway that I'm giving one to your wife, probably.
Yeah, so maybe we should.
It's not, though. I was inspired by her story, and that's that's the truth. So let's jump into talking about the future, and I'll tell you where I want to start, and I'll tell you where I want to end up. We're going to talk a little bit about Convergence 08, the Unconference, because that's going to be our topic on Sunday's show, and we're going to have some special guests. So I want to hit that last, and then we've got several things we'll talk about in between. But let's start with T. Boone Pickens. I believe you had an opportunity to see T. Boone Pickens in person and get an update on his plans for completely changing the face of the American energy landscape. So tell us about it.
Well, without spending the rest of the show on it, let me just very quickly say T. Boone Pickens, energy guy from way back. He's been in energy in one form or another, mostly oil, all of his life. And, he wakes up about a year ago in the middle of the night and says, honey, we got to telling his wife, honey, we've got this problem in this country. Who's going to warn people that this thing is going to get out of hand with skyrocketing oil prices, breaking this country before we can make the move to the next thing, and basically crashing our economy, and before we're able to have the capital to move to the next alternative fuel. And her response to him was, this is so typical, this sounds like my wife. Her response was, well, you're going to do it in the morning.
Wow.
Not at 3 a.m., but, in the morning you can get started with the program. Well, that's exactly what he did.
Wow.
And so his idea is basically this, that we have in this country a lot of natural gas. A lot of natural gas is available to us in this country. We do not have a lot of oil. We, of the oil that's produced in the world, we use about 25% of it every day, but we only have about 4% of the world's population, and we have about that much. We have about 4% of the world's oil. So,
does he break it down to the point of saying how much of that oil that we use goes into powering cars versus other things, or does?
No, he does not. He just says we use 25% of the oil that's produced in the world, and we only have like 4% of the population.
Right. Okay.
So and so he's basically saying that this is unsustainable. As other economies come online, like China and India, and they start demanding their share of the oil, which is only fair if you think about it.
Sure.
If they've got the money to pay for it, they're going to pay for it. And so as that happens and the oil goes up and up and up in price, we are not going to be able to sustain our status as a developed country. And in response to what is happening, Russia and even Iran, which has all this oil, they're moving their populations to natural gas automobiles, compressed natural gas automobiles. He says it's a wise move. That's what we need to do. This is a mature technology. We've got it available now. We don't have to develop batteries like for the electric cars that's been a very tough thing to do.
Right.
Develop batteries for electric vehicles and things, and he says, we've come a long, long way in that, and I do believe that'll be a coming thing. But as for moving to something today, here is what we have available to us today. Now, one thing I have a couple of critiques about what his plan that I would have liked to have seen him spend more time on, and one was alcohol-based fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Zubrin's idea of using alcohol-based fuel, T. Boone just kind of glossed over it.
Right.
He mentioned it, but very, very briefly. Also, shale oil. We have like Saudi Arabia levels of oil in this country that's available, but it's in locked up in shale. But there are companies working on how we can get that, extract that oil. And the processes have improved even in the last few years. And so, you know, it's not like the oil, we don't have oil. We do have oil. It's just that we have to get sophisticated about extracting it. And so that's you know, he did not mention that either. But his idea is to take the natural gas that we presently use to make electricity, use that to power automobiles. Obviously, we need a new automobile fleet. And then we would count on other sources of for our electricity. His idea is wind and solar. So,
well, okay, go ahead, keep going.
And the problem with wind and solar is that the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. And that's,
you're back to the battery problem, aren't you, T-Boone?
Yes, you are. And so I was very interested in reading this article today in MIT's Technology Review. We may have an answer for T-Boone, how we do this, where, you know, we can get our electricity from the sun and from wind, and then use it any time of the day or night or when the wind's not blowing or whatever.
So what's the idea there? What are they proposing?
The idea here is this guy's just great. I love his theatrics as he's making this announcement. I'm going to show you something I haven't shown anybody yet, said Daniel Nasiera, a professor of chemistry at MIT. So he's up on stage telling, you know, a symposium this. I'm going to show you something. And then he cranks up a video. And can you see that? He says, exciting, pointing to bubbles rising from a strip of materials immersed in water. Oxygen is pouring off this electrode, and then there's another electrode saying, hydrogen is coming off the other one. This is the future. We've got the leaf. And what he means by that is that he is extracting hydrogen from water the same way a leaf does through photosynthesis. And
I think we've seen something about this, right?
Yes, we have. This is new, and the reason this is new is that he's using different catalysts that have not been used before.
Oh, okay.
He's using cobalt that is allowing this to be done and for a net energy gain, basically. And so,
there's a connection between this ability to produce produce hydrogen via photosynthesis and solar and wind. What's the link there between those?
The link is this. You use the energy from solar and wind to extract hydrogen from water. Okay, you use that energy.
Okay.
And then you got hydrogen for whenever you need it. And
okay,
hydrogen
so
can be
the hydrogen
used, can,
becomes the battery.
That's right. Hydrogen is then the battery. And that it could be burned directly as a fuel, or it could be used in a fuel cell to make electricity. You know, there's a number of different ways you can use hydrogen then whenever you feel like it to, you know, power whatever you need. And you could have an electric power station running 24 hours a day off of solar power. You know, it's solar power first and then it's hydrogen, but the electric station is working off the hydrogen, giving constant power to the grid. And that's important because, you know, if you get a certain percentage of solar on the grid, above, I think, say 25% of the grid, then all of a sudden you've got this huge problem. Because you got huge power fluctuations between when the sun's shining and when it's not, and so this is the way to store the power and to have a steady stream of power being added to the grid at all times. And so,
although on that issue, I believe we had something. One of the topics that Michael had sent us is this idea of a smart grid that is actually able to process that load a lot better than the grid that we currently have. This is a model that that some folks in the utility business are currently looking at, which is the ability, if you're, let's say that the photosynthesis producing hydrogen notion doesn't pan out, how do you deal with the fact that you're going to have a lot more power loaded onto the grid when the wind's blowing or when the sun's shining than when it's not? This is specifically the issue that they're working on. And I would think that Is this fair to say that even with that model, you would probably with the photovoltaics, putting some of the sun's energy directly into power and putting some of it into this hydrogen process so that you'd have power later. Is that right?
That's fair, and that's right. Particularly if you were doing it for your household. Okay, let's say you had a solar cell on your roof. Okay, and it's the daytime and you're using electricity at that time. You could use it directly, and that would be a more efficient use of that power if you needed energy at that moment. But let's say all your lights are off, you've gone to work into the middle of the day, and you're away from home. Well, then you don't need a whole lot of electricity, I mean, beyond the refrigerator or something, okay? And so during the day when no one's there burning electricity, you could be building up hydrogen for use when you are home. And
absolutely.
And that, yeah.
What a great idea.
After dark or whenever you need it, you know?
Well, now I see that Matt Dewing has joined us in the chat room. So, Matt, you are now the official deputy chat host this evening. Okay, so
raise your right hand.
Yeah. actually, you had it right. I am Fast Forward Radio tonight because I'm logged in as Stephen. But we're both here. We're delighted you've joined us and get the chat room going. Michael is on vacation, so you can make the chat thing happen. Now, getting back just to Mr. Pickens' overall idea,
right?
And getting back specifically to the Zubrin angle. Well, the first question I would ask. Let me put on the skeptic's hat here for a moment.
Okay, I'll put on the T. Boone hat. Okay.
Okay. Okay. You be T. Boone, and I'll be Michael Darling because I think he's pretty skeptical about all this. Maybe the reason, sir, that you're not as interested in ethanol and in shale is because you don't stand to make a pile of money off either of those like you do natural gas.
Well, I'm 80 years old, he would say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not as rich as I was before the market crashed a couple of weeks ago, but I think I'm going to make it to the finish line okay. And really, this is not about me. This is about the generations to follow, and I am genuinely concerned about this country and what's going to happen in not in the next 20 years, in the next 5 to 10 years. And that's why I think that we need to move immediately to compressed natural gas, because it's ready. It's what we have available to us now. And I would say the process is already being put in place. There are municipalities that are replacing buses and garbage trucks and things like that with compressed natural gas vehicles. As they retire old vehicles, they're replacing those fleets that way. And so that's bringing in some of the first compressed natural gas stations into the country. And there are also about half a dozen long-distance truck lines that are beginning to look at the possibility of going to compressed natural gas. Now, why would they do that? $5 a gallon diesel is why they would do that. They see the handwriting on the wall. They see that they're not going to be able to be profitable at $5 a gallon diesel, and so they want to do something that will be profitable. And the good thing for them is the infrastructure doesn't have to be they don't need a whole lot of infrastructure changes.
Where I would have a question, because it seems to me that the biggest infrastructure change of all is that the vehicles themselves have to change. So
right.
I can see where it makes sense for city buses, for fleet vehicles, even for your long haul trucks, especially if you're gonna put up a bunch of these compressed natural gas stations, maybe along the interstates, along the main truck routes. But for cars, once you go the natural gas way, you're set, right? I mean,
right.
It's not like you're gonna be able to run a car part of the time off natural gas and part of the time off petroleum or some other fuel. Is that correct?
That's right. But here's how it could happen. Here's how it could happen. Long distance truckers, they need only a couple of dozen strategically placed, compressed natural gas stations to service the entire country. These things get enough can get enough distance off of a single tank that they can, you know, two dozen would probably serve them. And of course, those would be placed where they would be placed on the interstates. Well, the early adopters that want compressed natural gas vehicles because they're cheap and they also are very, very clean environmentally, they could fill up at home. You can fill up your gas tank in 2 to 4 hours, depending on how big of a compressor you choose to buy for at your house. Fill it up at home, and then that's a commuter car. And if there are enough stations, particularly on the interstates that you intend to travel, that are servicing those big rigs, then there's your option for long distance travel. Now, it's that's not perfect, obviously. I mean, you get in your gasoline powered vehicle, you don't have to worry about where the next station is. You can just head off and not worry about that. But this will be a slow process, but it's something that's not insurmountable.
Well, why not? Why not join it with another slow process that we're trying to roll out? And that would be, why not take all that natural gas, down convert it to either methanol or ethanol, and let it be a fuel that would then run in a flex fuel vehicle, which all the cars in the country potentially could become flex fuel vehicles, and it would just be a matter of getting that fuel out to the gas pumps. Why not do it that way?
Well, there's obviously the problem of where the alcohol comes from, T. Boone would argue. If it's coming from corn, then you start starving people in developing nations.
I'm talking about making it out of natural gas, right? You can take natural gas and down convert it to either methanol or ethanol. Why not use that natural gas to make a liquid fuel, which could then burn in a flex fuel vehicles, plus you'd have everyone else making their ethanol and their gasoline and everybody else trying to use those same those same gas pumps.
Well, the difference is efficiency.
Okay.
Natural gas is basically ready to put in your gas tank almost straight out of the ground. We add odor so we can smell it when it's leaking. But beyond that, it's not a whole lot of processing needs to be done to this gas. You can put it directly into the gas tank, and then it's incredibly clean. The emissions are basically oxygen and water vapor. Natural gas is superior for that reason. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to burn natural gas in a regular vehicle, though. And then, so you have a point there. So perhaps you could use natural gas to up the alcohol fuel supply, but at that point you start adding to the cost of the fuel.
Okay, well, let me just say this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're having a kind of a virtual debate with a virtual T. Boone Pickens about his intriguing idea for using wind, solar, and natural gas to change the energy landscape of our country. And if you'd like to join us, we've got the live chat going now with our special guest chat host, Matt Doing, or you can give us a call at 347-215-8972. So my response to that would be, actually, maybe, Stephen, I'll just ask you to take off your T. Boone hat. Now, are you buying all this, or what do you think?
I'm buying 90% of what T. Boone has to say. I think that alcohol is promising, and probably as promising as natural gas. I guess I should say, as for full disclosure, that I live in Shreveport, which is on top of the largest natural gas reserve in the United States. So obviously my area of the country stands to benefit quite a bit if our country were to adopt T. Boone's plan and go and move to natural gas. But
my point is we could adopt it either way. It seems to me it comes down to a choice between, do we highly modify the fuel, the gas,
right,
to make it into something else, which would then make it compatible with this other plan, or do we modify the vehicle?
Right.
So that it can, because it's a relatively modest modification that you have to make to a vehicle.
It's like $150 per vehicle. You could take a regular gasoline powered vehicle.
Yeah, you can take a regular gas powered vehicle, turn it into a flex fuel car. to turn a regular car into a natural gas car, I'm assuming, is a much bigger step. Or maybe you don't even do it that way. Maybe you just buy a natural gas car from
the get-go. You don't try to convert it. There are companies that actually can't do that, but it would probably be more trouble than it's worth. The thing to do is to go out and just purchase one brand new, and there's only one that's being sold in the United States right now. It's a Honda. So.
Okay. So it really comes down to a question of scaling up the, I guess, the production of liquid fuel, down-converted liquid fuel from natural gas versus scaling up production of vehicles that will burn natural gas in its pure form. And I would vote for, if it were left up to me, maybe I'm just a... Zubrin got to me, right? Because he talked to me for. He was on the show, the real Zubrin, not me playing the part. It seems to me that that's from the consumer standpoint, that's the easier solution. We get into a flex fuel vehicle, and then you make that natural gas something that I can just pump into my car the way I pump gasoline into my car. That's an easier fix than having to have a completely different kind of car. Now, the big objections, it seems to me, were the two you mentioned, one being efficiency. You're going to lose energy in the process of turning it to alcohol and then providing that alcohol, right. Pushing that out to the pumps. The other one is emissions, because my understanding is that natural gas, as you said, is virtually zero emissions. You get no bad emissions from that. But if you convert that to ethanol, there will be some emissions, not bad, but there will be some converted to ethanol, and I think the emissions are pretty substantial.
Right. And
so that's a bad deal.
Right. And again, you're losing some of the energy by way of the conversion, and so you've lost something there. So and your efficiency has been compromised by doing that.
But either way, it would be good news for the folks in Shreveport. Either way, you're selling all that natural gas for sure. So
that's right.
Now, how's he coming on his plan? Are people saying, yes, we're all about this, we've got to start building these wind farms, or, where is he in the process?
Let me get back to Michael's critique. He is personally building one of the wind farms in a place called Pampa, Texas. There is a place already in Sweetwater, Texas, that town has been revolutionized by all the windmills they've got all around there. And Pampa, Texas, just north of there, he's building another wind farm that's similar in size and everything. And Texas is really pushing to build the grid to support this, okay? His idea is this. In the middle of the country, we have tremendous wind resources in the middle of the country, basically from South Texas to northern North Dakota. We could build a network of wind farms and then ship the energy both east and west. Obviously, you have to update your grid in order to do that. He says that it should be, we built the interstate system with the idea that it would be strategically important. He says that this grid is equally strategically important and should take on that level of, that level of commitment should be put into building the grid to take the power east and west. And also, while you're building that grid, the wind farms are out there producing power. It's also a good place to build solar collection areas, so you can take the power from those as well.
Okay, so it sounds like he's putting his money where his mouth is.
Right.
Anyway,
that's
on
right.
This. So we will stay tuned. And it's going to be interesting to see whether this plan is adopted or whether it competes with similar but slightly different models of how we need to move ahead with our energy future. And I don't know. I love the idea of the massive wind farm covering the middle part of the continent. I think that's a great image, and I hope that. I hope that he makes progress on bringing that about, because I think that's a very cool idea. But I guess it remains to be seen whether his vision will be adopted or whether we'll end up with some other energy future.
Well, nobody ever hits it 100% on the head when predicting the future, do they? it's always more complicated or different from how whatever our predictions are. But I suspect that he is having an effect on the debate. It's funny, he's not particularly happy with either presidential candidate. You know, McCain, according to him, is all about nuclear power, and he thinks that's wonderful, a wonderful solution for 30 years from now, 20 years from now, or whatever. It would take that long to get the nuclear power up and going to run our cars off of, you know. And he says, and Barack Obama says what he wants to have within the next 8 years, a million new plug-in hybrid cars. And he said, Senator Obama, there are 275 million people in this country, a million cars that are plug-in hybrids. That's just a drop in the bucket of our what we really need. And so that's not ambitious enough.
Yeah, so, more like 10 million, 20 million, 50
yeah,
million.
Hundreds of millions, you know.
Right, would be the scale. Yeah.
It's the scale we need to be talking about. So.
Well, and so if he's pushing us to think in those big terms, even if none of it gets adopted, that he's doing a good thing. Just by opening people's eyes to the scale of the kinds of solutions that need to be put in place. Because I'm not sure that I'm completely sold on his idea as a package, but I completely agree with him with just the notion of the size of what has to happen. And what has to happen is big. But I think there are big things that can happen, and they can come from different directions. And I see in the chat room that Matt has mentioned hydrogen is now getting a cost parity with gasoline in terms of fueling vehicles. And actually, this raises another question for me. It's like, now can you take hydrogen? Can you make that burn in a flex fuel vehicle? See, to me, everything always goes back to the flex fuel vehicle, because if we can put everything into the gas stations that we already have and burn the fuel in the vehicles that we already own, it seems like we're that much farther ahead of the game. But that may or may not turn out to be the case. Even if it doesn't turn out to be the case, I think hydrogen is key for our energy future, either by way of the storage technology that you were talking about that MIT has mentioned. Ultimately, I think through nuclear fusion, which is the long-term future of energy, eventually we'll get there. And when we have nuclear fusion, we will have the true hydrogen economy that we look for. But an interesting interim thing might be something we've talked about before, which is this odd and some would say impossible technology that's being touted by a company called Blacklight Power.
Right.
And they
if these guys are right, then, you know, everything else will be moot.
Well, I think so. That's true. They might even their method of producing energy might even keep us from needing nuclear fusion in the long run. If because what they do seems to work. I mean, it's by no means the same process, but you get energy sort of in the same kind of almost free environment, right? You get a lot of energy for doing very little, to the point that by and large, mainstream science and engineering community have looked at this and said, it's a perpetual motion machine, this guy's a crackpot, this thing can never work. Well, I note from a week ago yesterday, Blacklight put out a press release. I don't know if you saw this, but they announced the successful independent replication and validation of their 1,000-watt and 50,000-watt reactors. So they actually had... Who was it that did this? Made by Rowan University. So they had a separate group. They had people that are not paid by them, are not part of them, not part of Blacklight Power, a completely outside group, a university. They said, here's our methodology, here's our process, this is how we're doing this. So Rowan University, their technicians, they said, okay, they put the thing together and it works. They're getting 1,000 watts from the 1,000-watt reactor and 50,000 watts from the 50,000-watt reactor. And
I would want to hear from the university. I would want to hear from them their take on what they were able to accomplish. When you got something as controversial as this, I don't want to hear it from Blacklight. I want to hear it from the university.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, yes. I mean, naturally the independent verification is going to be reported by the company who had it done. I mean,
right.
I can tell you that working in the software business, when we do a third-party benchmark at the company I work for, we'll do a press release, you know, touting those results. However, when that happens, that third-party company produces a benchmark report, an independent benchmark report to show, you know, to verify the results that that are occurring in the that are touted in the press release. So you're absolutely right, Stephen. There should be, and we should look for this. You know, here it is, Rowan University's Dr. Jensen has released a report outlining the full documentation of results of the offsite replication and independent testing of the blacklight process, and it's available. Guess where?
For Blacklight Power.
Blacklightpower.com.
they got the link there, I guess.
So I don't know if that gets you as far removed from them as you want, but I presume you can go there, you can grab that report, and at least that report was, according to the press release, produced by them. But I like your I like the sniff test you're applying to that. I think that's very sensible that you you know, because potentially this is exciting thing, but we don't want to get excited about this until there is proof. And then a little more proof, and then maybe a little more proof. What is it that the skeptics are always saying about psychic phenomenon, that extraordinary claims?
Require extraordinary evidence.
Extraordinary evidence.
I appreciate them getting more evidence, but I don't think that the evidence amounts to extraordinary just yet. I want multiple independent verification. I'd like some explanation from somebody as to how this thing works beyond, you know, beyond what we're hearing from the guy who started this company. You know, apparently we've got a thing here that shouldn't work. Well, that's fine. A lot of things that we've done in the past we didn't understand, and we benefited from electricity long before we understood electricity. You know, and drugs like aspirin, you know,
right?
We've had aspirin for 150 years, and I don't think we understand it quite yet how it works. But or maybe we've just learned the last year or so. But you know, so
yeah, we do seem to be getting closer on aspirin. That's an interesting thing.
But we you know, so maybe we will be able to use it and not understand it for a while. But I would like to understand it, or at least have some have somebody that's come forward that's a, you know, mainstream physicist who says okay, I see now, and then do a independent explanation of how this thing's supposed to work. So,
and here's why that's tricky. Actually, before I say why that's tricky, I should say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're spending some time talking mostly about energy, but other topics in the future this evening. And if you'd like to join us, you can join our online chat, or you can give us a call at 347-215-8972. I think the reason that it's going to be hard to get that assurance is because one of two things is true about blacklight power if it works. If something is really happening, one of the following two things is true.
Okay.
Either it works in a way other than the guy who's touting it thinks it works. Okay.
Right.
So either this guy has found a way to produce energy and he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean,
yeah, he had a brilliant accident.
Yeah, and I mean, doesn't know what he's doing in the most generous sense. It's simply
right.
That he misunderstands what he's doing, and he's producing energy, but doesn't know how.
Right.
Either that, or it works exactly the way he says it does, and the mainstream scientific community is wrong about how the universe functions.
Right.
So,
which is possible too. Either is possible.
I lean more towards he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, right.
but
well, actually, I lean towards the third thing, that it's still a big pile of nothing. And
no, if it works, assuming it works for a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I agree. The most likely thing is that they'll look at it and they'll go, "Oh, it didn't really produce any energy."
Yeah,
we thought it was, but you know, it'll be cold fusion all over again.
Right, right. That to me strikes me as the most likely outcome at this point.
That is by far the most likely. But assuming you're getting a real net energy gain.
Right.
Of the scale they're talking about, that's when one of the two things I just said is true. And if that's true, then you got a big roadblock. You got a major hurdle that's going to have to be overcome before we'll really understand how it works. Because either he's going to have to understand what he's doing, or the scientific community is going to have to come around and go, oh, I guess it does work that way, which would be the much more difficult of the two. However, having said that, what would push us towards crossing that hurdle? What would push us towards clearing that roadblock and understanding what's going on here would be...
Well, when we're all driving down the road in hydrino-powered vehicles and our economy is based on it, at some point we have to accept the reality of it and then figure out why it works.
I mean, before that, power a city block on it for a year, right? I mean,
right.
You know, at that point we got to go, okay.
It works.
Something
it works.
Is happening for sure, you know, I mean...
We
wouldn't have to just look at a report that's on their website to say, yep, looks like they have definitely done something here. But it's going to probably take that, especially if it really works and he's right about hydrinos. In fact, it'll probably have to go closer to what you said. We'll probably have to be living in a world where you turn on your light switch and it's black light making it happen before the scientific community would be ready to go, okay, well, I guess we have to make this shift. We've been proven wrong, you know, in the most unexpected of ways.
Right.
But as Matt says...
I would love that, by the way. I just don't buy it yet. But I got to say that sort of thing would be awesome if it were true. That would be a great story, wouldn't it?
It'd be incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
You know, from the standpoint of somebody who likes new stuff, who likes science fiction, who likes interesting scenarios about the future. This story has got it all.
You got an underdog who believes in his dream, and yeah, it'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, but as Matt says, frankly, I would be amazed if it works the way Blacklight says, and I think we would all be truly amazed if that's what's actually happening.
Right.
And we'll see. That's the interesting thing. Either they'll start producing power, and one of those two hurdles gets jumped, or we just sort of hear about Blacklight every now and then for the next couple of years, and then we don't hear so much.
Right. It would seem to me, though, that Blacklight is on this collision course with reality. It seems to me that it'll blow up in their faces if it's a big hoax, or it'll be proved to be, actual way to generate power, and we ought to know in short order. It seems to me that we're going to know one way or another fairly soon.
Fairly soon, we should know. Well, as Tom points out in the chat room, moving their hydrino theory from academia to practical use is actually not a complicated process and quite easy to accomplish. So we shall see. Actually, I think even getting it into academia might be the hard part there, Tom. The scientific community to publish these results, I think, might be a little bit of a challenge.
I think practical use might actually be the easier part. You know,
I think plug
it into the grid and start producing power. I mean, that's easy by comparison to changing minds and hearts on this issue.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Okay, so I think we've talked energy to death. What else did we have on our agenda for this evening?
I just want to throw out this trivia thing. I thought this was awesome. It was over at Fight Aging. I don't know if you had a chance to catch it, but perhaps the oldest human tissue in use today.
I did see that. Yeah. Go ahead. Tell us about that.
Okay. All right. It's a cornea that was transplanted 50 years ago into a Norwegian man. He's now 80 years old. And it was transplanted from someone who had passed away that had been born in 1885. He's still alive and doing fairly well today. And so this particular cornea is 123 years old.
Wow, that's amazing.
And apparently it's doing fine for him. And in the comments, one guy was saying, you know, I hope this Norwegian guy is an organ donor. And
yes.
And that cornea goes on to serve somebody else. I think the point that Reason was making in this post is that different body parts age differently. We wear out at different rates. We just don't often get to see how long a particular body part could last. In this case, we know that that something as simple as a cornea can go on a long time.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any shelf life issue for this particular cornea because, at 100 and what did we say 100 and
123 years of age.
At 123 years of age, this cornea is going strong and to all appearances has another good 123 years in it. And what's really interesting about that is living human tissue, 123 years old with an indefinite future in front of it. I had no idea that they were doing corneal transplants in 1950, and I was intrigued to read, I guess, that it was not that new of a procedure even in 1950, and that there could be older corneas out there circulating. But this is the oldest documented human living body part.
Apparently this particular recipient's still around and doing well at 80 years of age. So.
Right. Yeah. So it's entirely possible that that another one has been passed on to someone else who was an organ donor, and that you could have somebody on the third or fourth generation of a cornea. Who knows how long they last? It's an intriguing thought. But one of the things that Reason wants to point out there is that this is human tissue,
right?
Because we accept the idea that some organisms can live a long time. We accept that a tortoise can live several hundred years, that a sequoia tree can live, you know, thousands of years, that there are organisms that can live a long time, but we're not one of them.
Yeah.
And he would argue, I think, and does argue, that there's no biological reason, there's no physical reason why we couldn't be one of them. And the fact that a human body part doesn't appear to have an expiration date stamped on it, at least this one part doesn't, just goes to show you that that could apply to other parts of the human body, and indeed, ultimately could apply to an entire human organism.
Right, right. And you know, it's just a matter of learning how to fix these things. And so keep ourselves going. So
exactly,
that's the whole point of the strategies of engineered negligible senescence. The
Aubrey de Grey's outline in his book, Ending Aging, and as he explained to us when we interviewed him on Fast Forward Radio, what was that, about a year and a half ago, I guess?
Right, right.
Yeah. The idea of making all of a human body absent an expiration date, the way this cornea is, that's the goal, and I think that the existence of that one body part is a very encouraging sign towards the fact that we will ultimately get to the human body without an expiration date on it. Okay, well, I think we're getting close to our time. I wanted to talk just for a couple of minutes about our program next week, because we're going to have a very special show next week. As you know, coming up November 15th and 16th at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, is going to be Convergence 08.
Right.
And this is a nun conference, which I'll explain that a little bit here in a moment, but this is what the Foresight Vision Weekend has morphed into. The Foresight Vision Weekend has evolved into something bigger than the event that it originally was, and we'll actually have Christine Peterson from Foresight Nanotech on our program on Sunday talking about this event and how we've made this leap from the Foresight Vision Weekend to Convergence 08. What's cool about this is we're not going to be attending just a Foresight Nanotech event, which is cool enough on its own, just to get together with the usual gang of senior associates at Foresight Nanotech is always a treat and loads of fun. But this event is also going to be sponsored by H+, the World Transhumanist Association, and several other futurist organizations, including the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence, the Lifeboat Foundation, and a number of other groups. So we're going to have Christine
Peterson. Hence the name Convergence. So.
Yeah, thus the name Convergence. They're these different groups who are, you know, I have to say, it's not like these organizations are strangers to the Foresight Vision Weekend. You see many familiar faces from each of these organizations at the typical Foresight Vision Weekend. But this is the first time that the different groups have all had a piece of the action, as it were. They're all owners of the event, and it's an event that belongs to each of these groups as well as to Foresight Nanotech. So this is kind of a big deal. The Vision Weekend's been going on for a long time. As you know, I'm a big advocate of of the Foresight Vision Week, and it's one of my favorite events of the year. I will be attending, so I'm hoping to provide a report on the Vision Weekend from there, and we're looking forward to having Christine on the program on Sunday. We'll also have PJ Manny from H+. I've also invited a couple of other major figures from a couple of the other organizations. Haven't heard back from them yet, so I won't say their names yet. I don't want to create an expectation of guests that we're not able to deliver on. But at least for sure, we'll have PJ and Christine on, probably a couple of other folks, and it promises to be a very exciting time hearing about what the UnConference is all about. I got to participate in that last year, and this is a really unique format that they put together, Stephen, where people who have something interesting to say put it up on the board and say, for this time period, I'm going to talk about this particular subject. And everyone who's interested in that, for that time period, they go into that room and they listen to that what that person has to say on that subject. So it's a conference to the extent that people who share common interests in these future-facing events get together, but it's an unconference because you don't go in with a set program. You go in only with the knowledge that you're going to be meeting with some really exciting people who have some really exciting things to say, and the program forms sort of in an organic way as you go throughout the weekend.
Well, PJ was, had asked us to come and to be part of that. I'm going to be unable to make it this year, and I hate that because I know how much fun and how informative it was for you when you were able to go.
But, yeah, well, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to go next year, Stephen. So I think we're going to just let's start planning now for you to attend Convergence 09. I think that's what.
Let's just plan for that to happen. So
we'll start making that the plan now. But anyway, we'll look forward to having Christine and PJ and possibly some other folks from Convergence 08 on the program on Sunday. And I guess I get to talk about the music tonight.
Well, I know what the title and the song is. This is Brannon Hedgegoth and Friends is the name of the band. And the song is She Took Me Nowhere.
All right, She Took Me Nowhere. So we're going to listen to Brannon Hedgegoth and Friends with She Took Me Nowhere. Stephen, thank you very much. It's been great as always. Matt Doing, thank you, and thanks to all our friends in the chat room. And to everyone listening, we look forward to being with you again this Sunday to talk about Convergence 08 on the next Fast Forward Radio. Until then, good night.